faster it sells. Yeah, but I need every interested buyer to see that it's for sale. Oh, and those orange cones? Happy to pay for those myself. Yeah, I can hold.
There are easier ways to drive traffic to your home when you put it on the market. Choosing a Coldwell Banker agent guarantees you maximum exposure of your home. Along with local and national sites, they list your home on the most viewed real estate website in the world. They'll make sure there are multiple digital photos of your home online available 24 hours a day using all of their web resources. That's just one of the ways a Coldwell Banker professional finds you the right buyer faster.
Yep, holding for the detour.
For every advantage in selling your home, visit ColdwellBanker.com. All offices independently owned and operated except offices owned and operated by NRT Incorporated.
A real prize for movie lovers is available at auction. ABC's Liz White has the story.
You could bid on Marlon Brando's script from The Godfather. It's among the items up for auction next week at Christie's in New York. The personal effects of the Hollywood legend may give a glimpse into his life. There are heaps of telegrams from theater and film people, his driver's license, even his foosball table. Oh, and a fake bloody finger. The stuff's expected to sell for more than $1 million.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Liz White, ABC News, New York.
The public will soon get a chance to see the stamps that rock star John Lennon collected as a schoolboy. The Smithsonian's National Postal Museum in Washington says it has acquired Lennon's stamp album and plans to display it in October. A section of the fence from the place where President John Kennedy was assassinated has been auctioned off for nearly $33,000. The auction company admits that few, if any, of the pickets in that fence were there when Kennedy was. Steve Taylor, ABC News.
The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Welcome to Body, Mind, and Balance, a weekly program devoted to celebrating the balance between physical health and mental health. Our show explores ways to integrate physical and mental health into a lifestyle of overall wellness. Our hosts are four professionals with diverse expertise and backgrounds. Corey Bank is a sports psychologist. Bill Bryan is a personal fitness trainer and martial arts specialist. Valerie Shinbon is a psychotherapist. Susan Toller is an endurance athlete. Together, we are working towards achieving body, mind, and balance. And good afternoon. This is Valerie Shinbon. Welcome to Body, Mind, and Balance. And right away, let me just give you the call-in number just in case you have anything to say or any questions to ask. It's area code 610-664-4100. We're here at 860 AM WWDB. So I have two very interesting guests in the studio today. Today's topic is the myth of the traditional June bride. We're coming up to the end of June, the traditional month of marriages. And with me today in the studio are Eileen Carr and Michelle Canelli. And we're all three women in different stages of finding the balance between maintaining a romantic partnership that works and staying true to ourselves. And I think we all have quite a bit to say. So let's get started. Where do we think the myth comes from? You know, we talk about the myth, and right away, the first thing that jumps into my head is the runaway bride. You know, there's been a lot talked about recently with her in regard to her and planning the wedding and getting freaked out and all that good stuff. So where does it start? Let's talk about that for a few minutes. Where do we start to go to that place where it's all about, you know, getting married and the romance, and somehow along the way we might end up losing ourselves? What do you think?
I think we start as little girls.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about the books that our parents read to us, how did they start?
Right.
Once upon a time.
And how did they end?
They lived happily ever after.
Right. The prince comes along and slays the dragon, and he and the lady get up on the white horse, and off they go to live in the castle, Michelle, right? You were talking about, yeah, well, they lived in a castle, and they had all these servants,
I'm telling
you. Nobody else, you don't, somebody else walks the dog, right? So, Michelle, now you were married before.
I was for 10 years.
Okay. And you got married pretty young, right?
I was 21.
21, yeah. So you did the whole... Does the napkin match the centerpiece? And what color were the bridesmaid dresses? And yeah.
Everything was burgundy.
Oh, okay.
You know, it was very important to me at that time. I think a lot of times when we start out at such a young age getting married, we're more interested in the actual wedding event because all of your friends are getting married, people are having children, people are buying homes, and we just kind of go right on, you know, right on through with it. And we think this is the path we should take like our parents did.
Right, exactly. It seems to me that so many times in society we get sucked into that whole tidal wave and it almost starts to feel like a tsunami where you're on that roller coaster ride. Does anybody remember 25? Remember how at 25, everybody in their Aunt Lillian seemed to be getting married? I remember I went to more weddings that year. Mm-hmm. And then at 30, it happened again, you know, and along the way, it's just everybody's doing it. And if you're not doing it, then what's wrong with you? So there you were.
I look at my niece, who's 23, and right now as we speak, she's traveling across Europe with her friends for 5 weeks. And I'm still envious of her.
Right.
35 years old, and I'm proud of her because I think this is what to do. At 23, I was considering having children. Been married 2 years, mm-hmm. getting ready to have kids. Mm-hmm. And I can just see the difference. I'm so proud of her taking that other journey.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then the other thing that happens too, and we've all had a chance to talk about this a little bit, whether we are 21 or 51, we all see women who are doing that whole, oh, I'm getting married, you know, let's pick out the dress. It doesn't matter how many times they've been married before. It doesn't matter what age they are. Somehow I think we get really caught up. And I'm not saying this doesn't happen for men, too. I know just as many men who are really invested in the whole, come on, you know, what are my groomsmen going to wear? And, you know, where are we going on the honeymoon? And they get invested, too.
You know, in my marriage, it was different. It was my wedding. I mean, and you know what? I say that truthfully. He didn't, those types of things weren't very important to him. He just kind of, in our marriage, too, he just kind of knew those things would be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
So he never really had much input.
So you just did the whole deal. You were in charge of the whole shooting match.
Mine. It's true. It must have been more important to me than to him at that aspect of it.
Right. Now, I think that, well, now, Eileen, you're engaged to be married.
That's correct.
Okay, pretty exciting. And congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
If I haven't said that before. And things that you've told me about the planning for your wedding couldn't be more different from what you're describing, Michelle, than day is tonight. I think it doesn't matter what age you might have been. I wonder if maybe getting married, if you were Michelle's age right now, if you were 21, do you think you would have been more caught up in all the details?
I probably would have.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. I probably would have. But I don't know if it's just a matter of getting older and realizing, at least for me, the stuff is not important.
There you go.
What matters is you found a person that you want to spend the rest of your life with.
Right.
And that's what it's all about for me.
Right. You know, and I think that for those of us who are looking for that or thinking about that's what we really want, that's part of what that myth is all about, but not in a bad way. I think that part of it makes sense. But when we think about the myth, they lived happily ever after, but nobody talks about after they ride back to the castle, you know, and they cross over the drawbridge. Nobody talks about, well, are you taking out the trash tonight, dear, or is it my turn? And who's giving the kids a bath? And, you know, who's going to remember to pick up the groceries and all that kind of stuff? They don't tell you that in the fairy stories, do they?
Nope, it's all just there for you.
You're right. So when we think about the difference between the five-hour party and the however many years we get to live with somebody in a romantic partnership, like marriage, for example, we are talking about the day-to-day. And I think that regardless of age, a lot of people get caught up in the whole, oh, where are we going here and what are we going to do there? But it's not about the day-to-day. And that's really when the real work starts.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think that even now, I don't foresee myself getting married again anytime soon, but I do value the fact that there was a companion, there was someone to have children with and enjoy the holidays with, and there is loss in not having that once mm-hmm. you're divorced. But there is a lot of work for that. I mean, we all look at other people and their marriages and relationships, and we might say, hey, that looks great.
Mm-hmm.
We're not home with them in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know if there's issues about taking out the trash or all of those little family chores or who's doing more of the housework or taking more care of the children. And it's hard. It's hard work. And when you look at people and you can say, hey, they've got it together and it really is together, it's something to envy.
Oh, absolutely. And I think if we look at not only do we envy it, but if we try to work for it ourselves,
absolutely.
You know, if we see somebody who seems like they have what we're going for, then we have a place to jump off from. Then we have a place to go. We have an example to follow, if you will.
This is true.
Yeah. So we also were talking about generations before this. Now, my parents were married their entire lives, and I think they had one of those, I think if I step back and I look at their marriage, they certainly had the hills and valleys, and you can speak to this for yourselves.
Well, my example is the same way. My family was much the same as yours. Everyone in our neighborhood was married. There were no families were divorced. And sure, they had their ups and downs, and we lived in a close-knit neighborhood, so you knew who was having their ups and who was having your downs, but at the end of the day, everybody's family was intact.
Mm-hmm.
So it was nice, and it was something to want.
It looked wantable, didn't it?
It did. At a young age, at 21, I thought, hey, that looks nice.
Right.
Nice to have people to come home to.
How about you? What was your experience like?
Well, I am one of six, and six girls, as a matter of fact.
And, wow.
I know my parents, you know, there were trying times. But I think if they had to do it all over again, they would.
They would still do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
That's terrific.
That's good to know. That's a good example to follow. I think when we're blessed enough to come from that kind of background, we look at the people who did the work. And even though we hear them maybe criticize each other under their breath or maybe not under their breath, you know, as people get older and you watch these couples in the grocery store. You ever see the old couples in the grocery store? You gotta love these people.
Yeah.
They're like 70 years old and she's telling him how to push the cart, right? And I burst out laughing every single time because they're just so funny to watch. And yet here they still are together. And sometimes they even look alike.
Yeah, that's not to say that my parents wouldn't do things differently now.
Right.
But it's kind of neat to know that they would do it again.
They would do it with each other again,
yeah.
too. They would
yeah.
be with each other. They would choose each other a second time around.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing. Okay, so when we come back, we're going to talk about what happens when we're out of balance with romantic relationships and staying true to ourselves. And so we'll be here continuing talking.
Did you know that 114,000 people will be diagnosed with cancer in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, and that 49,000 people in our region will die from the disease this year alone? Hi, I'm Pat Remus, proud captain of the Penn Abramson Cancer Center bike team, and I'm here to tell you we can make a difference. Sign up now and join the Penn Abramson Cancer Center bike team for the American Cancer Society's 33rd annual Bike-a-thon ride on Sunday, July 10th, starting at the Ben Franklin Bridge. Join the Penn team and help fight cancer. It's easy to join. Just call me at 215-662-3355. That's 215-662-3355. Together, we can make a difference.
This is Dr. Corey Bang, founder of the Abington Center for Therapy and Sports Psychology, conveniently located in Abington Township. I am an outpatient therapist, a professor of psychology, and an athlete having completed numerous endurance events, including the Ironman USA Triathlon. I have over 10 years of experience in the field of sports psychology. A sample of my specializations include reaching peak performance, setting effective goals, and eliminating performance anxiety. I work with athletes of all ages and abilities. At the Abington Center for Therapy and Sports Psychology, I will provide comprehensive, confidential, and specific treatment to each individual. Please contact me at the Abington Center for Therapy and Sports Psychology for a free phone consultation to see if I may be of assistance to you. The number is 215-884-7240. That's 215-884-7240. Also, feel free to learn more about us at www.abingtonpsychology.com.
The Women's Heart Foundation affirms that the likelihood of getting heart disease can be dramatically reduced through diet and lifestyle choices. Choosing heart-healthy beverages is one such choice. Concord Purple Grape Juice may provide many of the same heart-healthy benefits as red wine, without the concerns about alcohol. Preliminary clinical studies on Concord Purple Grape Juice suggest benefits, including reducing the likelihood of blood clotting, increasing the flexibility of arteries, and slowing the oxidation of LDL or bad cholesterol, all of which are important in managing heart health. A message from the Women's Heart Foundation and Welch's. For free information about health tips and the benefits of Concord Grape Juice, visit www.womensheartfoundation.org and www.welches.com.
Okay, we're back at Body, Mind, and Balance. I'm your host, Valerie Shinbaum, and today we're talking about the myth of the traditional June bride with my guests, Eileen Carr and Michelle Canale. We're here at AM 860 WWDB, and the call-in number, just in case you have anything to say, is 610-664-4100. Please don't hesitate. So we're talking about weddings and marriage and all that kind of stuff. And Michelle just asked Eileen a very good question. You have five sisters, mm-hmm. and they're all married.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of weddings did they all have?
They all had the big traditional weddings.
With the big dress.
Big dress, big reception, church yeah. ceremony.
Did anybody get a little stressed out?
Yeah. But uh-huh. that's, you know, that's where they were at that time in their life. That is what was important to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, looking back now, would they do it that way again? Probably not.
You think?
Mm. Probably not. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little low-key.
Yeah. Yeah. It's real different.
Yeah.
I was reading in the paper on June 22nd, there was a very interesting editorial in the Philadelphia Inquirer written by a woman in response to all the hoopla that's been going on with this runaway bride person. And she actually, the title of the editorial is A Bride-to-Be Who Hasn't Run Away, but she talks a lot about how stressful it is to plan a wedding and how many people want to tell you what to do and how many people want to tell you their own opinion and how many people use the word should and how many people want to use the words supposed to. So as we continue our discussion about what happens when we're out of balance, that's our next segment here. And I want to talk a little bit about that term of supposed to. Okay. We started by talking about you're supposed to get married, you're supposed to have children. And Michelle just brought up that as soon as you get married, they all start asking you, they all being family, friends, whoever, people who feel free to express their opinion. So now you're married. When are you going to have children?
Oh, it's a never-ending cycle.
Absolutely.
I mean, we were leaving the reception. I'm pretty sure that was one of the questions.
So I wonder how soon they're going to have children.
One of my endearing aunts, I'm sure, said, yeah. Well, hey, Shelley, when do you think we'll have some kids?
Right. So. We'll have some kids.
Yeah,
right.
We'll.
Oh, so what you're saying to me is if we're having the kids, then clearly you'll be over at my house every Saturday night to babysit so my husband and I can go out on a date. Is that what you're telling me?
My daughter's about 11, and I don't recall that happening. So
exactly.
We kind of muddled through on our own.
Exactly.
It is.
And then, of course, as soon as you have the first one, then they're all over you about, well, so, okay. Now we have one. So when are we going to see another one?
Well, I actually fulfilled that wish very easily because they came about a year apart. So,
oh, okay. Well, then you really complied.
They never asked for a third. I'm not sure what that means. So far, so good.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about then where does it go when it starts to go in a direction that you never saw coming? You know, we go back to they lived happily ever after, right? And you're in the castle with the prince and the white horses in the stable, you know, chewing on some oats or whatever. And then all of a sudden, or not really all of a sudden, I think we can look at, each one of us can probably look past at different relationships and say, well, where were my signals? Where were my signs?
Well, I can tell you with my own marriage, I do remember hitting a point where I said, how did I get here?
Oh, that's a good one. I like that.
You know, we were just before 10 years into the marriage, and I looked around and I thought, I don't have anyone to walk with or talk with. We don't have common interest. What exactly was I thinking, picking this person to spend okay. my life with?
All right.
And that coupled with his question to me, which I still laugh about to this day, he said to me, you're not the girl that I married. And tell me, I mean, is that the funniest thing you ever heard? I mean, it was 10 years later. I'd had cancer, two children, and a marriage. If I was the same person, I'd have been disappointed in myself.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that tells us a lot of about the journey, I think, you know, and how much we change and why we're saying today, not that I'm saying I'm against people getting married at 21. I think there's a lot of people I meet out there. I teach college and I meet a lot of young people who really have a pretty good idea about where they're going and what they want to do. And they have a life partner picked out for themselves already that they've been dating since they were 15 or 16. And I think that's wonderful, you know, and if they can make that work, that's terrific. I think the reason that I admire these young folks is because all along the way, they have a pretty strong sense of who they are, too. But what happens when we start to lose that? I think that's the real turning point for a lot of people. Like when you say, it's amusing that your ex-husband said, you're not the girl I married. Well, what do you think he was thinking?
I think he was seeing change in me.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want it.
Okay.
Because he saw that I just wanted to get back to school, which is how
yeah.
I came to meet you.
Right.
And I think he started thinking, if she takes these steps and the children are growing, she's not going to want to stay with me. I think he knew.
Yeah.
I think he just had, you know, the forethought to say, why does it have to be different? Why are you different?
Right.
And my
right.
question was always, we need to start doing things together. We just couldn't come together on that. He
right.
he seemed like, hey, everything's working just fine.
Status quo.
And I'm thinking, a whole heck of a lot needs to get better. So we just didn't see eye to eye on that.
Okay, that's interesting. You were going to say something.
But was
Eileen.
That going through your head, Shelley, when you decided to go back to school and you decided to make these changes for you, that, hey, once I'm through with these changes, I'm not going to want to be with him?
No. No, I wanted to go back to school throughout the entire time that I was married. And my husband would often say, he'd find a reason, it's just not a good time. It wasn't even financial. It wasn't that we couldn't afford to go back to school. My work pays for, you know, pays for my education to go back. So it wasn't an issue of money or the fact that I wouldn't have enough time for the family. I mean, all of that, we were both in good positions where that would work out just fine. I just think it was just so against who he was that he just didn't want those changes to take place. So it wasn't that one day I decided I'm going to do it. But interestingly enough, after we were separated for, I'd say, a good 6 months, when he was really reaching at straws to say, "What, you know, let's pull this back together," he said, "You could go back to school."
Mm-hmm.
And I was so angry because I said to myself, "Oh, I'm going back to school." I said, "But now I'm going to do it for myself." Like, right. I think before I was thinking I just needed to do it. It was something that I started, something mm-hmm. I should finish. And when he used that as kind of a mechanism to say, "Well, you should stay because you could go back and it'll be so much easier if we're together." And I just took it the other way. It was motivation for me to do it on my own. So mm-hmm. that now I can mm-hmm. say, I'm doing it on my own and I'm doing well on my own.
Right.
So it was more the motivation.
So for you, it was almost like a challenge.
It was a challenge. One, I need it.
What was interesting was what you said about, well, you can go back to school. I'm not only am I an instructor, but I'm also a psychotherapist. And many times I hear one or the other of a couple that I'm working with will say, "Well, I always feel like I need permission from him," or "I always feel like I need permission from her." And I think this comes up in partnership a lot when it's partnership that really isn't coming from a truly partnered place, where one person, without even realizing it, puts the other person in an authority position over them.
You know what's interesting? I know that I even use that terminology. We didn't have that kind of relationship, like where we'd say, "Well, you can't do this or you can't do that." I think it just kind of what we had been talking about maybe just before the show, how we said it just kind of happens. Where do you draw the line between courtesy and permission?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I could honestly say we were more along the lines of courtesy. It was mm-hmm. just, but when it came to the education thing, I think it was just our life was very busy. By the time I was 26, I had two children and I was going through the thyroid cancer.
Right.
And I felt like, what else could I do? So that that took a few years to get done. So it was kind of like there was always something very big in the way. And he just kind of liked that.
Right.
He liked that there wasn't room to just spread out and do my thing.
Well, and sometimes what I find as I work with people in my practice is talking about teaching each person to step back from the other and say, what is it about the other person that I admire? What is it about the other person that's different? What are things about the other person that they are passionate about? And even if they're not my same passions, at least this person has passions, and that's just as important. So that you hear all the time about opposites attract, or you hear all the time about, well, if they don't have anything in common, how are they going to get along? People don't have to be Siamese twins or joined at the hip to be good partners for each other. That's pretty important. So let's go back to the part about getting off balance, because that starts to overwhelm us, I think, emotionally. And here's where we go back to the balance aspect of the show, is what happens when one part of you is not in balance. I think it throws everything else off. That's my personal opinion. And it's very easy to get overwhelmed in the emotional roller coasters of the ups and downs, and other parts of your life are not being attended to as they could be.
Well, I know I can only speak for my own marriage, but with mine, I worked from home. So I was very fortunate to be able to do all the things with the children at school and things of that nature. And I loved it. Whenever I would come to my husband, I would say, "I'm completely overwhelmed. I have too much on my plate." And he always seemed to say, "Well, then stop all that volunteering that you do, or stop this or stop that." It was always things that didn't affect him in any way.
Mm-hmm,
you know, don't
mm-hmm.
stop the laundry, or
right.
You know,
don't stop the food shopping.
Yeah,
right?
Don't forget to bring food in the home. But right. You know, stop doing the parties with the children at school or taking part. And those were the things that I enjoyed.
Right.
I enjoyed the busyness of that. I liked that, and I still like that. When I go to my children's school, I'm Emily's mom or Sarah's mom. They know who I am because of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be a faceless name in my children's lives.
Mm-hmm.
So by giving that up, it isn't part of who I was, but he didn't want it to affect him.
You know,
he didn't want the things I was doing to affect our house and our home and our laundry and our shopping and all of those things.
So that comes back to the whole aspect of why it's so important to find a person. And this is, again, just my opinion, but I see this in the work I do. When there isn't competition,
mm-hmm.
but rather cooperation, when it's not competitive, then it's more about respect and regard and admiration and support. And validation. And all those words are very important. Michelle, you know this from taking my class. We talk about those words when we talk about personality development in the course I taught that you were in. So it was about all those words on the blackboard. And then I asked the class to think about, remember we did this exercise, we talked about all those words, we talked about respect and regard and admiration and support and validation and love. And I asked the class to think about how many people in the room are in a relationship where they have that.
It was interesting because there were quite a few characters in that class. So it kind of ranged. I mean, there were a lot of people. For instance, I'm in a relationship with someone that's 20 years older. We do not see things eye to eye. He's also a Vietnam veteran. So, I mean, he is completely different than I am in a lot of respects. I respect him. And all of the things that we put in that box, all of those terms that we used, do apply. But another word we are is very different. So, I mean, all of those things are certainly there. Respect, love, caring, friendship. But we're different, too. And the greatest thing of it is we're okay with being different. We right. found a balance there, where right. in my marriage it wasn't there.
Right. So, and that's important. So when you look at the difference, and we're going to talk about this in the next segment, we're not going there yet, but talking about how do we make those differences and the choices, because it's very much who you were and now who you are, and you've come through a lot of journeys along the way. Now, how about you? You were with somebody before.
I was in a relationship for 11 years. We never married, lived together the last 3 years. And then I had found out that he had been having an affair. So that was the end of our relationship.
Right.
And when I think back to 2 years ago when that all happened, and I think now about the person that I am, I mean, I agree with Shelley. You don't go through something like that. And like Shelley, I'm a cancer survivor, too. And you don't go through something like that and not change. You know,
exactly.
It's a life-changing experience.
Right. What it teaches us, I think, in every situation is that we always have to work on who we need to be mm-hmm. and who we're trying to be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to be talking about how do we go back to being in balance. So we're on our way there right now, and we'll be talking more about that.
Did you know that 114,000 people will be diagnosed with cancer in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, and that 49,000 people in our region will die from the disease this year alone? Hi, I'm Pat Remus, proud captain of the Penn Abramson Cancer Center bike team, and I'm here to tell you we can make a difference. Sign up now and join the Penn Abramson Cancer Center bike team for the American Cancer Society's 33rd annual Bike-a-thon ride on Sunday, July 10th, starting at the Ben Franklin Bridge. Join the Penn team and help fight cancer. It's easy to join. Just call me at 215-662-3355. That's 215-662-3355. Together, we can make a difference.
Are you anxious or feeling down? Struggling with relationship, family, or career issues? Wondering if you might have an addiction or eating disorder? If you answered yes to any of the above, then give me a call. Hi, I'm Valerie Shinbaum, a licensed professional counselor in private practice with over 13 years of treatment experience. I work with children ages 5 and up, adolescents, adults, couples, and families. Together in therapy, we can explore issues around parent-child conflict, marital and couple stressors, grief and loss, self-esteem building, divorce and custody concerns. I'm available in 2 office locations, Newtown Square, Pennsylvania, and Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania. Call me for more information or to schedule an appointment at 610-322-7829. Again, that number is 610-322-7829. I'm here to help you.
Now that we're older, I see a lot of kids who won't associate with each other just because of their religion or their nationality.
When do we learn to care about those things?
I mean, what's up with that?
Prejudice happens when you make assumptions without knowing the whole story.
Tolerance is accepting someone before they walk through the door.
No matter what their background,
their looks,
the ethnicity,
the religion,
their lifestyle.
It's accepting people for who they are, as individuals.
Tolerance is recognizing and respecting the beliefs or practices of others.
Their culture, their family, their traditions.
Tolerance is celebrating the diversity that makes us great.
Tolerance.org encourages people from all walks of life to fight hate and promote tolerance. People everywhere can find news, tests for hidden bias, and action guides for communities, workplaces, schools, and homes.
Before you make a judgment, get the whole picture.
Tolerance. Honor the differences.
Picture a world of respect. Visit tolerance.org to learn more.
Tolerance.org is a project of the Southern Poverty Law Center.
All right, we're back with Body, Mind, and Balance on AM 860 WWDB. I'm your host, Valerie Shinbaum, and today I have two guests, Eileen Carr and Michelle Canelli, here with me in the studio, and we're talking about the myth of the traditional June bride. Please feel free to give us a call at 610-664-4100. We welcome questions, we welcome comments, we welcome opinions of all types, shapes, sizes, forms, colors, flavors. Okay. So we're talking about being out of balance when relationships and romance go south and how much time that takes up in our heads and how it affects our lives. Earlier, Eileen and Michelle, you were both talking about having both been cancer survivors and how that changes you. And so if that happens in your life, how does that change your relationship and the way you look at your relationship?
Well, personally, I knew that I was healed for a reason. And I couldn't just sit around and wait for things to happen anymore, which is probably what invoked change in me. I couldn't just sit there anymore. I thought, if God's given me this chance to be well and to raise my children, then I need to do that well, and I need to be productive, and all of these things. And I think that's it. And I also felt alone during it. I felt like he didn't understand what I was going through. Whether he did or didn't, it was just my perception of it. And I kind of feel that in my marriage, that's when things went a little south.
Mm-hmm.
for me.
Right. That's a pretty life-altering experience.
I actually had a very different experience than Michelle. My ex was with me every step of the way. Any diagnostic testing that had to be done, he was there. He was with me for all of my chemo treatments. I mean, he was there, which is why after I had completed my treatment and 7 months later, I found out that he had started having this affair. It's like it left me scratching my head because the outcome could have been very different. I was very fortunate in that I was diagnosed early, it was treatable, you know, that's great. And that's why even today, I still scratch my head and think, how could you do that? You know, how could you do that?
I wonder sometimes if people are able to compartmentalize. I find that men do this much better than women. And again, I'm just generalizing, but in my experience, it's true that men can actually put pieces of their lives into certain boxes in their heads. And then when they're in that one box, like the work box, or my girlfriend has cancer, so now I need to be here for my girlfriend, or my affair with this other person, or my relationship with my family, or my activities outside of my home, or having to mow the lawn. And it's very much about, okay, first I have to do this, then the next thing I'll do is this, and then here I'll go here, and they can shift. Now, I think women do the same thing in a different way. We multitask a lot, and I know men who multitask. I know women who can't, except I find that with women, we might be on one task, but in our heads, we're all across. It's how can I describe this? It's like graph paper, and we're in different graphs at the same time. We're in different boxes on the graph paper at the same time. Even though we're focused on doing our children's homework, we're also thinking about the laundry and our own homework. And in your example, for instance, Michelle, thinking about, you know, what do I have to do for my job tomorrow morning, and do we have milk and all that kind of thing.
Well, I
even
work
though,
from home, so
yeah,
I'm
right.
constantly doing that. I often
right.
equate it to if when you're watching CNN at the bottom, they have that
yes.
little ticker that goes
the little
across
ribbon
the bottom.
Of news, right? The ribbon of news. The
yeah.
ribbon of news. Yeah.
I feel that is as in my position in my life right now right. with my children. I feel that's a constant thing in my life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, here's what I'm doing right now, but the triple task
exactly.
below. There's things that I know have to get done,
right.
and they will.
Now, I work for myself, and I find that since I went out to work for myself, I feel exactly the same way. I feel like that CNN ribbon of news underneath, because I might be doing this radio program, but I'm already thinking about what am I going to do, you know, next week in terms of collecting things towards next month, or what courses do I have to teach in the next summer session, or what other ways do I have to manage my practice. And that's always going on inside my head. So it doesn't turn off. It's like a switch that doesn't turn off. And of course, it can be turned off when we want it to be, but it's always going on. Whereas I think sometimes with men, they will, and again, not all men, but they will focus where they need to focus, and they zero in on the task at hand, whether it's playing golf or doing the laundry, or my girlfriend has cancer and I need to go with her to the hospital because she's having chemo today.
Do you think, Eileen, maybe that he did this because you had a long-term relationship and he thought, maybe he was thinking before, I'm gonna leave this relationship, but then he was more probably concerned what other people would think.
Or do you not think that? Did you feel compelled to stay with me once I was diagnosed? Were you thinking of leaving around the time I was diagnosed? Right. And he said no. Now, you know, is that the truth? Probably not.
Do you wonder sometimes maybe he felt obligated? You know?
Absolutely.
He felt responsible to see you through to make sure that you would be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that said, I even think about, I mean, we have a lot of unfortunate, we've been dealing with a lot of cancer in our family recently, and the children have had a lot of questions. You know, what if something happens to Dad, Mom? What will we do? And I always tell them, and I do firmly believe this, I know it won't be reciprocated, but I would always be there for Rob if something like that happened, because he's the children's father. I could see myself standing beside him and taking him to appointments and taking care of him because it's who I am.
Right.
It absolutely would not be reciprocated.
And
it's difficult because then the kids say, well, what if something happens to you? And I always just say, that's okay. We've got a big family. We've got sisters and brothers and aunts and uncles. But so I can understand not so much an obligation as just the need to do it, because I would need to have done it too.
Right. Well, and also because he's your children's father, and you would want to make sure that he would be okay for them.
Right.
And if there was anything you could do to help situation.
I'm thinking maybe that's what your gentleman friend may have been thinking as well. He may have just needed to do it to know that you were well.
Right. Right. Because that's a long term, you know, that's a long time that you're with somebody. And the emotional connection you feel, you know, for this other person. Something else that just came out of that statement, too, the idea of going back to when things start to not be the same, or the scratching your head thing, or the I knew he wasn't going to be there for me, or any of the other things we could talk about. And how does that affect us? Now, you just said being in the hospital, going through the treatment, you felt very alone. Now, your romantic partner at the time was with you, but then afterwards you found out this whole other stuff. So in a way, the essence is the same. We're still in that alone place, and alone not in a good way. I like to talk about the word alone a lot, because I think that's why people choose relationships that don't really have the best value sometimes, because they're afraid of that word alone. And what I think we're really talking about here is not the word alone, because I think alone is extremely empowering. But I think lonely is a very hard word to say. And I think that for many, 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 many people, not only men and women, just everybody, it's not a gender-specific thing. Everyone's afraid of alone, and that's the word they hear in their head. But they don't let themselves say lonely, because there's a big difference.
There is a big difference, because I certainly enjoy my alone time. You know, when I can shut the door and it's just me, I appreciate it. But when I look through my life, let's say if I jump ahead 25 years, I don't know if the person I'm with today is the person that I'll be with in 25 years.
Right.
But I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that I will have a companion in my life.
Right.
Because it's what I prefer. I'm sure there'll be plenty of times in that 25 years that I choose to be alone and not feel lonely.
Right.
It just depends on what things are on my plate at that time.
Do you ever find that when you're with a partner who's not really a partner to you in the way that you deserve or want, that it feels just as lonely, if not more so?
Absolutely. I felt that in my marriage, which is why I had to take the final step and just say, it's not an easy thing to say. I don't want to be your wife anymore. And I remember one day in an argument that we were having, those words flew out of my mouth. And I remember looking over my shoulder thinking, who just said that? Because as much as I was thinking it, I said it. And I knew then. And I remember looking behind me for just a split second thinking, oh my gosh, did I just say that? And then I knew. I said, well, if I said it, then I meant it, and I need to just get it together.
Right.
It's funny, talking about being alone, my ex hated to be by himself.
Right.
Hated to be alone. And what I found myself doing was, if I went to the gym to work out, I'd do it very quickly so I could get home so he wouldn't be alone.
Right.
If I had to run errands, I'd go out and run them and then go home, you know? So it was that whole
Giving over of myself. Yes,
yeah.
And again, it's when we're in a healthy partnership that makes sense, that works, the giving over doesn't feel like an absence or an emptying of the well, because the well is being replenished all the time. But when you're with somebody like what you described and how you just described it, there sounded a little bit of frantic about that. You'd rush to the gym, do the workout real quick, and then go right back home because
he was alone.
He was alone. Oh, yeah. Hurry up. You know, it's like leaving a dog at home or a very young child, right, without a babysitter. So it's the idea that how do we make sure that we're taking care of ourselves, and each of us can speak to how we change, right? Mm-hmm. That was a change for you, wasn't it? To have to think that way, to have to readjust your thinking in that way to accommodate someone else. And yet, when the chips are down, was the person able to be there for you in a way that made sense or in a way that you might have needed? Yeah, maybe, maybe not. But the person that we're with now and the person that we have become ourselves is somebody who would not tolerate that, somebody who would not maybe choose to be with somebody who wouldn't do for them as well. I think of healthy relationships as being three personalities. It's the one person, the other person, each is an individual. And then there's this circle in the middle where they connect. Mm-hmm. And I think that if those three things are all on the same continuum, that's the best of all possible worlds, because then each person is growing as an individual and the relationship grows as the third individual. And that's a pretty important thing.
Mm-hmm. I think a difficult thing in my marriage was just remembering that we had to keep that. We had to be friends and we had to stay together. We just became parents and we forgot to be friends. We forgot to find things that were of common interest, something to lose. So if you have the myth of the June bride, I say hold on to that, because kids take an awful lot out of you, but they give so much too.
Right.
But in a marriage, I think if you don't maintain a friendship, it's just not going to last.
I think that's true in any romantic partnership, because nowadays not everybody gets married to a romantic partner. Just as you described yourself earlier, don't know that you'll ever do it again.
I don't imagine that I will, right? But I won't say never.
But you won't say never. Right, exactly.
I will not say never.
Never say never.
Trust me. You know,
I
said that.
I think maybe when my girls are grown and they're doing their own thing, and I even said today just before the show, I said I could see myself maybe 20 years from now, maybe 20 years from now, having all the things that I wanted to accomplish on my own and not feeling that I was beholden to anybody.
Exactly.
If I could just take this journey for the next 25 years and do the things I want to get done and accomplish what I want to accomplish, I think it would actually be easier for me to link up with a partner and feel like I could give them me. You know,
because you wouldn't be taking away from yourself. That's the big difference. I think that when a romantic relationship is not with a true partner, we're not the kind of person we want to be for ourselves either, because now it's all about saving the romance, saving the romantic relationship, making sure the boat doesn't sink. You know, we're taking water in at the dam. Somebody put your finger in it right quick so we can hold that up, shore it up. Did you find, I think with other people too, they want to reach in and say to you, oh, no, give them another chance. You know, give it a chance. Don't walk away from this person. What if you never find someone else? That is a big question that comes up. And there's that other person's agenda coming on to you about, oh, won't you be lonely if you're by yourself? Won't you be lonely if you're not with this person? And that's a big part of why people stay with who they're with, I think, sometimes, rather than walk away from a situation that isn't in their best interest. Okay, so we're going to keep talking about putting ourselves back in balance. Remember, our call-in number is 610-664-4100 if you have any questions or comments or thoughts or opinions. We're here on Body, Mind, and Balance at AM 860 WWDB.
Did you know that 114,000 people will be diagnosed with cancer in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, and that 49,000 people in our region will die from the disease this year alone? Hi, I'm Pat Remus, proud captain of the Penn Abramson Cancer Center bike team, and I'm here to tell you we can make a difference. Sign up now and join the Penn Abramson Cancer Center bike team for the American Cancer Society's 33rd annual bike-a-thon ride on Sunday, July 10th, starting at the Ben Franklin Bridge. Join the Penn team and help fight cancer. It's easy to join. Just call me at 215-662-3355. That's 215-662-3355. Together, we can make a difference.
With so many demands on our time, it is challenging to start a consistent fitness program that gets results. Now, there is someone on your side. Bill Bryan is a personal trainer certified by AAAI ISMA and is also a 6th degree black belt. is knowledgeable in kickboxing, boxing, cardio conditioning, strength training, Jeet Kune Do, jiu-jitsu, self-defense, and more. Here's the best part. Bill will travel to your office or home to work with you. No more lines at the gym, no more fighting traffic. Bill Bryan will personalize a program that meets your needs. No two workouts are ever the same. His prices are reasonable, and he gets you results. Schedule a free consultation with Bill Bryan by calling 215-537-1830. Mention this ad for a 50% discount for your first session. To achieve the physical conditioning that you have always wanted, your solution is here. Call Bill Bryan at 215-537-1830.
My name is Rose, and I experienced a spinal fracture last year. That was before my doctor discovered I had postmenopausal osteoporosis. Like too many women, I'd had the disease long before it was diagnosed. Osteoporosis is a silent but serious disease that weakens bones and causes them to break more easily. When left untreated, osteoporosis can lead to fractures, loss in height, curved back, and back pain. It is never too late to help your bones. Make sure you get tested for osteoporosis. Do weight-bearing exercise, get enough calcium, don't smoke, and ask your doctor whether prescription therapy may be right for you. To learn more about osteoporosis, its risk factors, and how to prevent and treat it, visit helppreventfractures.com.
Isn't this cool music?
All right, welcome back to Body, Mind, and Balance. I'm your host, Valerie Shinbaum. We're here on 860 AM WWDB. And if you have anything to say, you'd like to share your thoughts or your opinions or feelings with us, please feel free to call us at 610-664-4100. So we're talking about being in balance, romantic relationship, maintaining a romantic relationship that matters and is of value, and staying true to ourselves. And I think we were talking before we went to break about how to maintain that, how to find it. And part of it is walking away from a partner who doesn't have that same sense of commitment to having that balance and finding someone who does. So
I kind of look at my life right now, and I think I often say I have never been busier.
Mm-hmm.
I have to start keeping a calendar. I never thought I'd be one of those people that had to keep things written down. But we have very busy days. The children each join an activity. I have work issues that I have to maintain. I have just fun things that I calendar in. And I've never been busier, but I've never been happier. And I think at the end of my marriage, I felt so tired and so just withdrawn from who I am that getting that behind me and making plans and going back to school and just getting involved in things like this, just not finding a reason to say no, is how I found a way to strike a balance.
I think it's important to think about the things we like to do, too, because I'm lucky enough to be a person who kept saying all the time, if I do what I love, then it's not going to feel like work. And that's actually what's happening. I like you, I agree. I've probably never been busier. I've never been so programmed into the things that I do. But that doesn't feel like programming, like I'm forcing myself to do it, because it's all joyful. You know, it's all work. I get up in the morning and I say, ooh, guess what I get to do today? This is so cool. So that can be fun. It's exhausting sometimes. I don't know about you, but I come home sometimes at the end of a day and I'm like, oh my God, can I just sit on the couch now and not talk to anybody? That'd be a good thing.
I'm a late night flipper on the television. That's right. Like the one time that's to myself. You know, I get up very early and start my day, but I really like and appreciate those few hours that I have to myself. That's where I get my balance. I might read a book or watch a television show, or I might just sit with things quiet.
Right.
But you're alone.
You know what? I'm alone and liking that aspect of it.
There you go. There you go. Now you're about to not be alone over there.
Oh, right. I'm so looking forward to being alone. Okay. Yeah, I really am.
All right.
I really am. It's just nice, as I said earlier, it's just nice to finally find somebody that you're meant to spend the rest of your life with.
And it feels that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and I also think that when that happens, it doesn't matter what the label of the relationship is. It seems that when that person comes along, I think at least one thing is true for sure. It's when you're really focusing on having a romance with yourself. It sounds a little strange, but it's actually what works, I think, for people. And this is what I try to teach people all the time. It's when you take the focus back in, when you shift the focus back on you, and you take a look at what do I need? What do I need? And it's not just what do I need from someone else. It's what do I need from me? That's about going back into balance. You know, that's about finding a balance. So if it's about fitting in a bike ride, or if it's about, you know, getting to the gym, or if it's about reading a book, or if it's about just doing the TV surfing thing, because that's what clears your head. But it's all about finding what works for you in a 24-hour period of a day. Is where are you going to go? What do you need to get done that has nothing to do with anybody else, but really is about taking care of you?
I think what finally got me back in balance was after crying for 6 weeks, I finally got angry and got into counseling. Mm-hmm. And that's the best thing I could have done.
Well, thank you for giving a plug to my favorite profession in the whole wide world. Thank you very much.
No, but seriously, I thank God for people like you, Val. Mm.
Oh, thank you very much.
But that's what did it for me. Yeah. Because you know, you have to look inside yourself, and you have to admit things about yourself. You have to admit things about this person that you just spent 11 years with, and take off the rose-colored glasses. Uh-huh. And it's very difficult.
Right. I think it comes down to wondering when you're with a certain person. And again, this goes back to looking at yourself. There's a difference between compromise in any relationship, whether it's with family or it's with friends or it's with a romantic partner or it's with a boss or it's with clients. There's a difference between compromise, where it's about the compromise between yourself and the other party. And the other compromise that I like to talk to people about is when you're compromising a part of yourself. You know, like giving up activities because of the person that you're romantically involved with, because they don't like to do them too, or they don't want you to do them without them, or they don't want you to do them at all. Like going back to school or hurrying up and going to the gym and then coming home right quick because mm-hmm. the person's waiting for you. I think that's a different kind of compromise, because now you're compromising who you are. And I think when we go back to balance, when we're all talking about the balance aspect, it's about finding all those emotions and feelings and interests and likes and dislikes and preferences, and just saying, all right, this is who I am. This is what I like. And if somebody else comes along, fine, but it doesn't mean I stop doing the things that I like to do. It doesn't mean I stop taking care of my kids. It doesn't mean I stop going bicycling. It doesn't mean I stop, looking into being in business for myself. Doesn't mean I turn down an opportunity to be the host of a radio show. You know, it's all about what I want to do for me. As you were saying earlier, Michelle, about what do I need to get done for me? And that's the return. I think that's where it starts to happen. And then all of a sudden, somebody shows up who admires you because, look, you're doing all this cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And you're also not the kind of person who's going to walk away from the things that are really, truly your passions, truly your intents, your interests, your future, your direction, your goals. And that's really exciting stuff, because then you're starting to have a relationship with yourself.
Mm-hmm. You're also starting to give yourself some value. I think it took a long time for me to realize that the things that I wanted to do, it was okay, and it wasn't selfish. And
exactly.
It was okay to put some time out there for myself, mm-hmm. or to factor in school, and it's okay to change my job and need a little extra time for that. And it's hard. It's hard to strike a balance, but it's nice when you finally get it all kind of working in the right order.
Well, I think there's two kinds of selfish, too. I think society and our families and everybody else teach us so much about, oh, don't be selfish, don't be selfish. People always say that, you know, don't be selfish. That's so selfish. That sounds so selfish. Because I tell people, every day when I get up, I think about what I need to take care of for myself. And right away, the first question I get is, well, doesn't that sound really selfish? Aren't you being really selfish? And the answer is, yes, I am. And if I don't take care of me, I have nothing to give to everybody else. Because if you give to everybody else before you do for yourself, then you drain the well and there's no replenishing the water. So that's the kind of selfish I like to talk about. Selfish that works, because you're owning self and dealing with self and caring for self in order to care for others.
Mm-hmm.
That make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So
going
back into balance, you know, coming back around to balance and finding the time for everything that we want to get done. Once you're in balance, it's not too hard to find the time.
Friend and I often joke back and forth. We both have small kids. And we often say, like, we'll get on the phone at, like, 9 in the morning. We've done so much by 9 in the morning.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, I've started working. I've gotten the kids ready. I've given them breakfast, packed their lunch, sent them on their way, did the laundry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a million things. I may have even made a business call in there.
Right.
And I think to myself, there's people that don't get this done in an entire day.
Right.
And it could make me tired, but if anything, it just kind of... I feel good. I feel good that all of that went smoothly.
Right, right.
It wasn't overwhelming.
Because there was nobody else's agenda. When you put your agenda at the forefront, and you don't put your agenda at the forefront in the way of other people, it's not as if you're coming in with a steamroller and saying, my way or no way.
Right.
Part of being in balance is about not having to have your way. It's just whatever I need to get done, I'll get done. And there's a real shift in the thinking and a real shift in the focus. So then you can bring that into a romantic partnership with somebody and you don't lose who you are, you know? And even if the person is somebody radically different from you, doesn't mean that the partnership doesn't work, because each person is regarding the other in a respectful and caring and supportive way.
I guess our challenge at hand now is to make sure that my children don't wear those glasses like the rose-colored Brard.
Well, you know, we talked about this. We talked about this.
We
before,
did talk about this.
Talking about your daughters. I think we talked about the two. Well, the funniest story is about how do we talk to little girls? We start with little girls, and what do we say to them? Oh, when you grow up and get married and have children, .. Now,
I've said that quite a few times, and I have one daughter who will say, and it's the opposite daughter that said this. It really threw me for a loop. The comedian in our family said, oh, mommy, I'm going to have kids. And, you know, she goes on this whole storybook story like we're talking about with the, you know,
fairy tale,
we're going to live on a farm and you can come live with us.
We'll have some sheep.
It'll be great. And my other daughter, who's the older daughter, who I guess maybe her feeling is, she says, I don't think I'm going to get married and I'm not planning on having any children. And I sometimes look back on that and I laugh because they're so different. But I know someday they will be presented with marriage, maybe.
Right. Maybe.
Maybe. I mean, maybe the decision.
Or some romantic partnership. That's
partnership.
Why I like to say romantic partnership.
And you know? I hope that through the journey I've raised them right to say, make sure that you look. You want that person that looks at right. you and wants it soup to nuts, you know?
Yeah.
Wants the messy hair and not the frilly makeup and who enjoys taking walks and all of those things. So I think it's our job as women to raise them just a little bit different than maybe our moms.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then you told a story about your daughter and an assertive thing that came up, and you said you had to stop yourself from telling her, oh, be nice.
A little,
you know,
too much.
Little too much. Don't take over. Don't take over the show. You know, and I think that that's another message for women that they get all the time is, you know, defer to other people. Make sure you give everybody a chance. Everybody has to be fair. It's like Rodney King, you know, let's all get along, right? And the thing is, sometimes we will and sometimes we won't. I don't think it stops you from being a nice person if you also take care of yourself. All right. Well, that's been our show for today. We're here at Body, Mind, and Balance with Eileen Carr and Michelle Canale. Thank you very much for being my guests.
Thank you. I really appreciated
having you. Join us next week on Body, Mind, and Balance when your host, Dr. Corey Bank, is going to be here on Saturday, July 2nd, and he's going to be talking about different ways for reaching one's fitness potential, including proper nutrition, necessary equipment, and sports psychology strategies. That'll be Dr. Corey Bank next week, July 2nd, on Body, Mind, and Balance at AM 860 WWDB. Thanks.